this Brisbane hearing are to Action Reform Change Queensland and Queensland Association for Healthy Communities. And I think Carmen Parsons is a member of Action Reform Change Queensland. It's going to represent both those groups, Carmen. That's right, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So thank you for pardon me, coming this morning. Please speak to your submission, and then I've got some questions that I'd like to raise with you if I can, please.
Thanks, Graham. ARC and QAC's submission, I won't read out our actual submission, but I thought I'd just elaborate on some of the themes in it and talk a little bit about some more recent things that have been inspiring us on the international stage, actually, to fight the good fight. But our submission really is that there's ample basis in international human rights frameworks for removing discrimination against people in same-sex relationships. And we also think that there's been quite a shift in public opinion in Queensland over the last 10 or 20 years, and that's probably most obvious by the huge support for the changes we had to anti-discrimination laws in 2002 that was supported by both progressive and conservative governments, which was a real change for Queensland, obviously. We think that the removal of many of these areas of discrimination has made a real change in gay, lesbian, bisexual and transgender people's lives, but that there's still a lot of work to do. So, obviously, at the federal level, this inquiry has revealed at least 43 pieces of legislation, I think 69 it's up to in the second discussion paper, which discriminate against us, which, when you hear that number, makes you realise just how many different aspects of our lives are still unequal. We'd agree with the Liberal MP Malcolm Turnbull's comments this week, where he said, as areas of discrimination are identified, they should be dealt with. I don't think there is any justification to discriminate against codependent relationships, for example, in case of Medicare or health benefits. Let's hope that that sentiment continues through to the outcomes of this inquiry and we do get some real change. But when we spoke to women and men in same-sex relationships to prepare our submission, really they were perplexed that financial inequalities remain in superannuation, Medicare, taxation, defence and other areas. They compared their financial situations to that of their heterosexual friends and siblings and found it a divisive, intolerant and discriminatory situation, which is increasingly out of odds with the tolerance and friendship and support that they increasingly experience. More people are out to family and friends, expect to be able to work in their chosen field without fear of discrimination, and feel brave enough to be open with their children's teachers. But legislation is not keeping pace with Australian families and communities who've learnt to grow and accept their LGBT children, friends, neighbours and colleagues. The gaps in legal protection and full equality before the law can only mean one thing, a conscious legislative response intended to treat people in same-sex relationships differently, to stop short of the sort of acceptance we are coming to enjoy in our personal lives. And we think this has to change. There are some sections of the Australian community who favour legal and social policies which emphasise marriage and financially and socially punish those of us who are unmarried. Firstly, we would say to that, let us get married too. But also recognise that many heterosexual and same-sex attracted people don't marry but continue to raise children and support each other. People in significant relationships deserve the full protection of the law. Without adequate protection, issues of parenting roles and financial responsibilities towards partners, ex-partners and children are not fair to all parties. We think it's the right of children to have both parents responsible for their ongoing financial, social and emotional needs. Another issue that some people spoke of was that sometimes in all of our lives one partner may be out of work temporarily due to sickness or perhaps moving to accommodate the other partner's career or family obligations. Again, as family units, people in these situations should be recognised as such so that the working partner can use their superannuation to support them or can claim them as a dependent spouse on their tax return. One of the issues I think that we also face is a lack of information about laws when they do change. There were some recent changes to superannuation laws, for instance, that I think most people in the community aren't aware of. And so you go to find out whether you can put your partner on a super form, and you don't really go back and ask 2 years later. You just take that first piece of advice. And I think that there's a real need for information about our rights that perhaps the Commission may be able to help in some way in the future. We mentioned that one of the couples in our submission had moved to the UK with their two children. That they've now been through a civil union process, which to indicate their ongoing commitment to each other, having been together for over 10 years. When they return to Australia, as they plan to do, they'll relinquish many of the rights given to them in the UK, like the ability to adopt their own children, which is currently not possible in Queensland. And I would add, in support of Susan's comments about presumptive parenthood, that that's a key issue for families in Queensland, and particularly lesbian families in Queensland, because if you're in a heterosexual relationship, the Status of Children Act you would automatically become a parent if you have a child together, perhaps through an IVF program. But when lesbian couples choose to have children together, the non-biological parent is still not recognised at all in Queensland law. And so our friends that have gone to the UK, in some ways have done that so that they can have that full recognition, and it will be hard for them coming back, just like it's been for the other people have spoken about today, coming back from the UK. In fact, we're fast becoming one of the only Western countries not to have not only that parenting recognition, but fuller forms of relationship recognition, which has also been mentioned by other speakers. Tasmania is currently the only state where this is possible, with their registration scheme available to same-sex couples and other significant relationships. There's been little debate in Queensland about this issue, but it's essential. I think now that people have heard a lot about the UK civil union scheme, people are getting more interested in having something like that here. And the issue with Australia is that we really need one in each state, because it's only marriage that the federal government can deal with. So while it's a national issue, it's something that we think state governments need to actively consult the community on and look towards, moving towards, not just for same-sex couples, I would add, but also for people in other significant relationships. It would not replace de facto recognition, but it would just be another way that you could sort of be acknowledged as being in a relationship. I just wanted to also add that my partner and I were recently in Montreal, where 1,500 participants from around the world took part in a conference on LGBT human rights. The Montreal Declaration, which came out of that conference, which I commend to the Commission, is a comprehensive list of the changes needed to build an agenda for global action to realise LGBT human rights. It focuses on protection against state and private violence, freedom of expression, assembly and association, freedom to engage in private consensual adult same-sex sexual activity, full recognition by the United Nations, and participation in society, education, the media, healthcare and religion. So it's really covering everything. But in particular, it talks about some of the issues that we're particularly concerned about in this inquiry. It says, fair chances in employment or business is essential for LGBT individuals to be economically independent, to maintain self-esteem and lead a fulfilling and productive life. The declaration does go beyond the financial and work-related questions this inquiry is asking, because I think it's making the link between financial issues and all of the other aspects of our lives. So I'll just quote a little bit more from it, where it says that legal, political and social changes that will bring LGBT individuals equal rights do not serve our interests only. In a society where some people are oppressed, nobody can be free and equal. Bringing about the changes we want must therefore be the result of the combined efforts of the LGBT human rights movement and other groups and organisations which share our vision and goals. ARC and Quack would like to thank the Commission for the opportunity to speak today and for conducting the inquiry, and if I may, I just wanted to make a couple of recommendations to HERIOC. Firstly, that HERIOC develop an ongoing consultation process with the LGBT community in Australia, similar to the LGBT Advisory Committee established by the Anti-Discrimination in Queensland. And secondly, that this committee should be involved in monitoring and reporting discrimination and violence against LGBT people and in mounting public education campaigns against homophobia and discrimination. In particular, they could assist HERIOC to mark the 17th of May each year as the International Day Against Homophobia, which is another proposal in the Montreal Declaration. Thanks.
Thanks, Carmen. Those submissions have been very helpful, as has your presentation to the inquiry. Are you able to indicate where we can obtain a copy of that declaration? Is there a website for the...
Yeah, there is a website, or I can just send someone a copy. But it's the LGBT rights, human rights, World Human Rights Conference, but... I've got a copy here.
Have you? Oh, yep. Well, if we can talk to you afterwards, we might grab a copy of that, because that may be helpful as we prepare the report from the inquiry.
Yeah.
I want to ask you some questions, if I can. Submissions mention that the inquiry should also look at financial benefits and work-related entitlements for single gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender and intersexual people. Could you help us identify some of those areas where you suggest there might be discrimination?
I think it might be just in terms of being discriminated in the workplace, which is certainly covered by Queensland law, that if you experience discrimination on the basis of sexuality, for instance, in getting a job or on the work, at your work, then you obviously can make a complaint. But I think it was probably referring to those kinds of things, so that it may not be systematic discrimination, but that... I suppose people are still discriminated against on the basis of sexuality even when they're not in a relationship.
Mm.
And we were really just trying to make that point, I think.
Well, okay. I was just trying to draw out whether there were actually financial or work-related benefits where you were saying people were discriminated against on the basis of their sexuality, because we'd be interested in those. I mean, I take your point about broader discrimination.
Yeah, I can't think of any specific examples, sorry.
Okay, sorry. We've received submissions that suggest that the category of same-sex couples also raises problems for some intersex people who don't identify as one gender or another. And you briefly discussed the issue of gender status in your submission. Do you have any comments on the special issues facing people who are intersex and or transgender?
I suppose only to say that those are really valid concerns, and we certainly, as ARC, would have tried to work across the whole community, and including people who are transitioning or who are already have transitioned to another gender. It's a bit hard for me to speak on behalf of intersex issues. I don't really feel comfortable to speak authoritatively on that. I mean, obviously, it can't be an either-or situation. There has to be recognition. I mean, I guess if you remove the concept of gender, if you remove the issue about heterosexuality or same-sex from all of the legislation, then I would have thought, particularly for transgender people, then you've basically solved the problem as well.
Mm.
Because whatever your new gender is, it doesn't matter. It doesn't change your rights.
Mm.
Whereas now, if you change, you may have some rights and then you give them up, or vice versa.
Mm.
For intersex people, I guess we do need to think increasingly about how to recognise a third gender or a lack of gender identity. And we would obviously support anything in that direction.
Mm.
Sorry, that's about all as far as I can say,
no,
I think.
That's fine. Thank you. You've talked about leadership and government leadership, and also the changing way in which gay and lesbian people are viewed in Australian society. Are your organisations aware of any polling in Australia that's assessed changing attitudes to GLBTI people?
I think in our submission we did find a couple of sort of Sydney Morning Herald or those kinds of polls, which obviously are not especially rigorous, but... Mm. And in the short time available, we didn't have time to thoroughly search that out. But there have been big studies on the gay and lesbian community and the change, that people are coming out more and all of that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are some polls, but in the short time available, we didn't come across the more rigorous ones. So
no, that's fine.
I don't have them now.
We thought that your comment may have been based on that, so we're just trying to draw that out because we'd be interested to look at those if there were.
I think our evidence in Queensland was the remarkable change that happened in a fairly short space of time between I suppose the late 80s and the late 90s, there was a big change, and by 2002 we had such a massive change of legislation, and that it was supported by National Party members and Liberal Party members who previously wouldn't have made any of those kind of comments, and they made them on the record, and I think that was our major evidence for that shift.
Sure. No, I understand that. Thank you. Your submission talks about the Australian Defence Force, and you note that there have been some changes to internal policies recently in regard to gay and lesbian people. Can you list the policies that have changed?
I can tell you where they are listed.
Okay, that'd be great.
They're listed on the ACE website, Australian Coalition for Equality.
Okay.
There's some fact sheets on that website. But I believe it's around things like relocation, partner rightly relocated for for work purposes, and previously gay partners wouldn't be sort of funded to move with them or just be not recognised, but they have made some changes to that kind of thing. I think some of the sort of compensation type of things and that sort of thing, but that ACE website, there's a fact sheet on there that covers everything.
Okay, that's helpful, because we're obviously looking at policies as well as legislation, and it's harder for us to track down those sorts of policies. So if ACE have done some of that work, we can have a look at it. In the submission, you suggest that I'm talking now about Medicare, that Rod and Rod's heterosexual brother have very different levels of health expenses. Can you identify the financial advantages that Rod's brother has in terms of medical expenses? Do you have any figures on the actual medical expenses incurred by couples like Jeff and Rod in your case study?
I didn't bring any figures with me.
Right.
No.
But do you have access to those? Or would you be able to provide us with
those?
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, because those sorts of practical comparisons would be very helpful.
Okay.
And you also, it's a similar question, and you may not have the figures with you, but if we're able to get hold of them, it would be helpful. You also suggest that heterosexual couples wouldn't pay as much for IVF as couples like Mina and Marjorie. And again, we wondered if you had comparative figures for those sorts of costs.
We could probably get those. I think to some degree, some of these things are quite discretionary. Because, like in Queensland, doctors can still refuse to provide a fertility service to lesbians, but increasingly they don't. They don't have to discriminate, so they don't. Because that's a bit unclear, some doctors will tell. We've heard that some people are told that they have to pay the full Medicare price, like that they can't get any subsidy back. What do you call it? Any rebate back?
Yes.
And that's a matter of hundreds of dollars each month.
Sure.
Whereas just to do a fairly basic procedure, and whereas other people have been told that they can claim it on Medicare, and then it's under $100.
Yes.
So whether that's a law or a practice, I think it's more of a practice.
Okay, and there may be an informational issue there as well for doctors.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, the doctors described it to the patients as if it was legislation, but I think that's misleading, because the legislation doesn't say that, as far as I'm aware, doesn't say that that lesbians can't claim that.
Right.
So, but we could find those figures for you.
Okay. Look, if you could, that would be helpful. On tax, do you have specific figures for the tax return that you set out in your case study from Penny and Natalie, showing the difference between being counted as a couple and as two singles?
No, I didn't ask them for their actual tax return, but
no.
No,
it's just the figures which, and obviously, anything like that we de-identify, but being able to quote the differentiation is a very powerful way of expressing the discrimination, and that's why we're looking for those sorts of pieces of information.
Yeah, I'll ask them if they're comfortable. Yeah.
Sure. You express concern about including cohabitation as a requirement for relationship recognition. Do you think that same-sex couples have different problems to heterosexual couples in this regard?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that it is a difference, but I think that probably it's an emerging kind of modern feature of relationships that people don't necessarily always live in exactly the same house. I mean, you might live next door to each other, or you might both own a house in the same block. You know, it is possible to have all of the other features in, 2A to 2I that in that discussion paper without people living together. So you're still in a relationship for all those other factors.
Yep.
One of the other examples people have used is that people like in the Defence Force, where one partner is actually away on duty and the other person's away. They're not... I mean, whether that would really be questioned, are they living together on a genuine domestic basis, I suppose that would still be their home. But those are the kinds of concerns that people have raised, yeah.
Yep. Okay. In your recommendations, you suggest using family impact assessments for new legislation so as to include same-sex couples. Do you have any examples where this sort of assessment has taken place? Or do you know what criteria are currently used in these such assessments?
No.
Okay. It was just an interesting proposal and we wanted to tease it out a little bit more. But so anything that you...
I might have to speak to Rod about that. It might have been one of his ideas, I think.
Yeah. Well, maybe, if you could, and anything that you are able to let us have, that would be great. Okay. Look, I think that covers the questions that I wanted to ask you. Did you have any other issues that you wanted to raise from the submission?
No.
No. Well, thanks again for your for the submissions of both organisations, and for the time put into their preparation, and for appearing here today and your responses. It's been very helpful to the inquiry. So thanks, Carmen.
Thanks, Graham.
Ladies and gentlemen, this brings us to the end of the Queensland hearing for the same-sex inquiry. If I can just give you a brief picture of where we go from here. As you may know, the submissions on the second discussion paper that we released a week or so ago, we're accepting submissions on that until the 3rd of November. That will be also about the time that we complete our hearings and forums, and we'll then commence the work on preparing the report. The report should be prepared early next year, and we provide that report to the Federal Attorney General, who has to table it in Parliament within 15 sitting days of the date of its preparation. In the meantime, you're aware of our website and the material on our website for the inquiry, so please keep in touch with that, and we look forward to making some recommendations to government based on what you and other Australians have put to us in regard to the discrimination in this area, which will bring some change on this topic. So again, thanks for your participation, those of you who participated in the hearing.